Welcome to those who are here for the first time, and welcome back to those who were here before. Tonight's event is sponsored by Anonymous. The Zechus Refuah Shleima for two very important people, Baruch ben Chana Basia and Alter Asher Yeshaya ben Friedel. May tonight's learning and brachos be a true Zechus Refuah Shleima for both of them. So last time we started talking about these beautiful sefer, Zriya Ubinyan Bechinach, Rav Shlomo Volbi Sefer. A little trivia, anyone remember what his birth name was? He was not born religious. His birth name was August Wilhelm.
Nice.
How's that for a name?
You tell us
that. Did I not say it? Did I say it last time?
I think so.
How's that for trivia? August Wilhelm.
Got to write that one.
He was born, quick, where are those pens? Yeah. Right, write that down. August Wilhelm in Berlin. He studied in a university in Berlin, eventually became from, was involved in a lot of Kiruv movements, eventually came to Eretz Yisrael, where he gave a beautiful, masterful series on Chinuch, which was recorded later by other people, but this is a text of the lectures that he gave. And the name of the book in English is called Planting and Building. That was the topic for last time. We spoke about a dual process of education. There's planting, there's the organic growth that comes from the child's own sense of autonomy, and we can plant seeds and have the child grow in their own way with our guidance. And there's building. There's the concrete, literal concrete structures that we build. We give them information, and we have to have both. Rav Volbi pointed out, if we have a child who's going to be just allowed to grow wildly according to their own desires, they're going to become a wild beast. And if a child is going to be just fed, spoon-fed, and built up, they'll become a robot. We have to have this balance of a child being able to take information and also to be able to plant and have them develop organically. And tonight we're going to talk about the importance of timing. The importance of timing for chinuch, not starting too early with different stages and not waiting too long. The dangers of either direction, and we'll get some very practical examples. Okay, in your sheets over there on page Yud Beis, on the bottom, this is where we left off last time. Again, we'll balance a matter of reading inside, not reading inside. I'm sure will be understandable for those who are more visual learners, more audio learners, all types of learners. Hopefully can gain something meaningful. So the name of the subcategory is Chashiva Sa'itoi, the importance of timing. And he quotes a Mishnah on Pirkei Avos, a pretty well-known Mishnah on Pirkei Avos, Re'inu Esdivri Chazal Ben Chamesh LaMikra, at the age of 5, a child is ripe for learning Chumash and Tanakh, Ben Eser LaMishnah, learning the Mishnayos, Ben Chamesh Esrei LaGemara, so if it's 5 for Chumash and 10 for Mishnayos and 15 for learning Gemara. He has an important footnote over here on the bottom where I put the arrow. He says, "Zmanim Eila Nikbu Lefiderach Halimud Bezman HaMishnah." He thinks that these numbers may not be so rigid. We don't necessarily have to follow these exact numbers. And what do our local schools do? Do they exactly start this way, learning Tanakh at 5 and learning Mishnah at 10? Yeah. Learning Gemara at 15?
Gemara's earlier, right?
Gemara's at 10.
Gemara's at the 5th grade.
Yeah. By the time they're in 5th grade, they're probably starting Gemara already.
In Europe, they knew like Shas Bal Peh by the time they were 10.
Because they were focusing on, well, Shas Bal Peh. Right.
That's what we're always told. You went to the same school as me.
Absolutely, yeah, the same training. So Rav Volbi says, Lufi Derech HaLimud HaNahug Etzlenu Hit Amit HaZmanim Hi Acheret. He thinks that these numbers may actually be different based on the time and place, and maybe the exact numbers are different. But the important thing is that Chazal give numbers. Chazal give state. Whether the exact numbers line up, but Chazal do give numbers. And he wants to know, Lama lo muktam yoser, why do we not start earlier? On the top of page Yud Gimel. Lama lo ben shalosh mikra. Why don't we say we should start from the age of 3 to start learning Chumash? If a child is able to, I don't know, understand Hebrew, why don't we start learning Tanakh at age 3? And he writes, Kankavu Chazal shat smicha shel hayeled nasis bahadraga. Most important thing we have to know is that child development happens gradually. It has to happen in stages. You can't force everything at once, and it's not even a matter of just too much. It's certain things are not matim, they're not appropriate based on the development stage of the child. Magia tekufa mesuyames shebahayeled kevar bashel lelimud mikra. There is a certain stage, a specific stage, at which a child is mature enough to learn Tanakh. And then at that stage, when there's something ripe about the child's development, it's a time to teach him or her Tanakh. Yachad em zeh, hayela gadel hala, and then the child grows further. Kishayeled magia legil eser, when the child comes to the next stage, which maybe was 10 back then and maybe is different now, but to another stage, hatzmicha shelo magia lekach, they're able to receive something else. Shuk var yachol mo mishnah. Now they can receive what it means to study Mishnah, which is a different skill. Acharei chamei shanim, another 5 years, humis bager or yoser, then child develops even further. Ukvar magia legil shalim b'gemara, the child is then able to study something further. Kafisharainu, it turns out, he says, Kavu kan chazal shiyesh tekufos piyela. We have to understand that there are different stages for a child. Vatekufos baos al pi atzmicha horganit shel hayelet. And these stages happen organically. Maybe it's not the same for every child. We have general stages of development. But there's going to be an importance just recognizing that there is a matter of timing over here. Lefi derech hagidol hatva'it shelo, according to the natural progression. B'meshach shenos hayelados over hayeled mitakufa letakufa, and over time they graduate from stage to stage. As hatakufa strichem lahakir, we have to recognize what these different stages are, ulehesiaches aleihem bisman hanachon, and to make sure to relate to each stage, to the child in each stage at the proper time, which is the importance of timing. You always have these child prodigies. You know, if you see clips from a late night TV show, you have this like 3-year-old going on there and listing all the 50 states and their capitals. Always so bad for those kids. They don't want to get beat up in school, right? Right? It's always hard to see someone who doesn't match up. And the reason why it's newsworthy and it's exciting is because it's not typical. It doesn't work. It's not appropriate. And therefore, it's exciting, it's newsworthy, it stands out because, hey, why is this fifth grader able to do advanced chemics or trigonometry? But by and large, to expect our children to be able to do things that are beyond their stage is not appropriate. And it's not even going to be effective. He quotes from the Sukkim, we say in Kriya Shema, the next section. The subcategory here is Ha'itli Nachon, that the proper time, Nekudas Ha'aschala. We have to figure out what is the beginning. The beginning is going to be very important. It's Kasub B'Parshas Ekev. Limadatem Osam Espenecham Daber Bam. To teach your children to speak about them, the Torah, the mitzvos, Kriya Shema, and he quotes in the Gemara in Sukkah, Katan Hayodea L'daber, when a kid begins to know how to speak, Aviv Melamdo Torah Kriya Shema. Once the kid has the capability, the capacity to use language, quickly capitalize and teach the child Torah. What does Torah mean? The Gemara says, Torah Tivalon Moshe. Teach the kid this, Torah, 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 right? Capture something in that moment when the child can speak. And he quotes from the Sifrei. The Sifrei is the Halachic Medrash on Chumash, by the same authors essentially as the Gemara and the Mishnah. And he writes something very, very scary. If you're looking to be freaked out today, this is the time to tune in. Mikan Amru, says the Medrash, Kishatinok Maskil Adaber, Aviv Medaber Imo Balashan HaKodesh, Umalam Do Torah. This is one of actually the best sources of studying Hebrew. There aren't many sources for the importance of studying Lashon HaKodesh. This Sifrei is. V'dibar Tabam, speak them, meaning the language of the Torah. There's a mitzvah to teach Hebrew and to teach words of Torah. And here the Sifrei gets very scary. V'im Ein Medaber Imo Balashan Kodesh V'ein Umalam Do Torah. When a kid begins to speak, a parent doesn't capitalize on the opportunity to teach them something. There are more copies over there, by the way, if anyone wants to follow along inside. Yep. And if you don't teach them, roi lo ki'ilu kovro. It's almost like you buried your child. What? That's really intense. What does that mean? Well, the Pasuk says, v'limadetem osam espenecham v'dal rabam, to teach your children to speak words of Torah and Shema. And the Pasuk says, l'man yirbu yameichem v'yamei v'neichem, and then you'll have long lives for you and your kids. And the Sifrei says, if you're going to speak about these words, if you're going to follow V'dibar Tabam, teach your kids, and they'll have a Riches Yamim. V'im Lav, in the last line, L'man Yiktzuri Yamechem. Might be deserving of a short life. And that's really intense. What does that mean? A person will lose their children, Rachman Letzlan, if they don't teach them? He's going to explain it in a much more palatable way. He says, Chazal Misbatim B'Charifos Rabba. Chazal, with their really harsh expression, are expressing to us the Kovim, and they're establishing for us, Shim Lo Tov Sim B'Diyuk, as harega shayeled maschil daber, if we don't capitalize on the moment the child is beginning to babble and beginning to really form words that can be spoken, ubo berega maschilim ledaber imo b'lashon hakodesh torah tivalon Moshe, if you don't choose that moment to impart and implant these important Jewish values, harezeki ilu kovro, it's like you've buried the child. Madua kolkach gedola chamura chomeres harega. What is so significant about this time that if you don't miss it, if you don't capitalize it right now, and you miss it, you've killed the kid? What does that mean? Haschalas hadibor zeh ha'itli hanachon lezrias hamuna. When a child is able to speak and able to express themselves, it is a prime moment to be able to implant a sense of faith. V'kishemaschilu medaber ito b'loshon hakodesh. And when you do that and you teach them right values of Jewish language and Torah, Zoya Zriya Ba'atzma, that is the best form of planting when the child is first starting to speak. If you do this Zriya at the right time, Ima Zriya Nasis Kisha Karka Muchana, when the ground is fertile and the ground is receptive to being able to produce growth, Hazriya Matzlicha, then it's going to be successful growth. And it'll actually start to grow. If you're going to delay and wait too long, then it's too late. It's already lost. What he's going to explain so beautifully is that that expression, you buried the child, means you've lost an opportunity. You've killed it. I think in colloquial terms, my teenage friends say that you killed it means you did a good job. But in this sense, you killed it means you butchered it. You slaughtered it. I guess it's also a good thing you slaughtered it. You killed it. But sometimes it means that you've wrecked it. You've ruined it. It's been irreparably lost. Now, this could be really scary. We talked tonight about missing an opportunity. Okay, my kid already has been speaking for a while. It means that it's not going to be helpful to teach my kid Torah at this point. No, that's not what we're going to say. We are going to say that when you notice a child is beginning to be at a certain stage, and we'll talk about stages soon, but that's the time to capitalize, because the earlier you can capitalize something when the child is most fertile, able to absorb information. So you could focus on teaching them the 50 states, and you could waste the child's opportunity like that. Or you could capitalize to teach the child something of Emunah, of faith, of Moshe Rabbeinu. I know someone who taught his kids all the different books of Tanakh as a little kid. The kid's growing up, still knows it. I don't think I know. Because you learn something as a little, I know some of them, most of them. But you learn it as a little kid, it sticks with you. There's an opportunity when someone is very young and they're so fresh, and they're just like sponges. They absorb so much. What are you going to choose to capitalize on now, in this precious moment? Are you going to waste it with having them memorize all the different divisions of the AFC and the NFC and which teams play where, which time zones? You could focus on that. That can come later also. But what are you going to capitalize now when the child is ripe for the absorbing everything stage? In the next paragraph, he says, "Hadvarim domim ma'od l'ma she'anachnu makirim ba'olam hatzameach." There's a good parallel to here to the world of agricultural planting. We're talking here about implanting values, implanting skills, teaching. But think about the world of agriculture. We'll say it outside right now, but if you start the planting too early, the ground isn't able to receive. And if the ground isn't able to receive, then you wasted a seed. And if you wait too long, then you put the seed in and it just sits there and it rots. Nothing is able to be successful. You really have to capitalize at the beginning stages to figure out what it is that the child is able to receive. If you look where the arrow is in that paragraph, it's a beautiful vort from Rashi that really defines what the word chinuch means altogether. So this is what the word chinuch actually means. The second to last paragraph. Hadvarim halalu heim hayesod shel nekudas ha'aschala. We really need to know what it means to capitalize when the stage is just starting. Rega hazria, that's the moment to plant something. That's the moment to see a little bit of information go a long way. Haschalas achinuch, the shlavav hashonim, beginning the education process for the different stages. His Rashi parshas lech lecha kosev legabi Avram Avinu. The pasuk describes Avram going to war. And the pasuk says vayarak es chanichav. Avram Avinu, he armed his chanichav. Already that word chanichav has the root of the word chinuch in there. So what does chinuch mean? Look at art school. What do they say? They say his trained men. Okay. So Rashi comments chinuch hu lashon haschalas. The definition of the word chinuch means to prepare something and to begin the starting process of preparing a person or an object for the ultimate function it's going to have. The idea of training, the idea of being a trainee. The chen, Rashi has examples, chanoch lenar. This is the Hank slogan, chanoch lenar al pidarko. Hank made it up. Who's the OG who said this? Mishnah, Rashi Shlomo HaMelech said, Chanoch lenar al pi darko. And Rashi, that's an example of what it means to have a haschala. Chanukas ha-mizbeach, Chanukas ha-bayis. In those contexts, it's clear, Chanukas means an inauguration. Inauguration of a new house, Chanukas ha-bayis. The story of Chanukah is the story of Chanukas ha-bayis. It's the rededication of the mizbeach, the dedication of the Beis HaMikdash. It's about restarting fresh and capitalizing on the moment of beginning. If that's the case, chinuch isn't just involving capitalizing at the right time. Chinuch, the word, the Hebrew word, means to actually inaugurate something, to find the time when something is budding, when something is able to be inaugurated and started on a fresh path. Inyano shel chinuch lefi Rashi, hu haknisa hanachona b'nekudas haschala, means understanding when a stage is beginning, what was previously unavailable to the child, and what is now suddenly an option. What's still too far away? What is the right time for now? What lessons can we focus on? What skills, abilities can we focus on during this stage? The word chinuch means to be cognizant of the fact that some stages are right and others are wrong. Certain abilities and skills are fit for this time, and other ones are not. That's built into the word chinuch, to be cognizant of the timing. Kishayalad magia lematzav mesuyam, when a child arrives at a certain stage, tzrichem lizroa bo mashehu muchan leklot bo'osos man, to think, what are they able to absorb at that time? And that's why he says, finishing this paragraph, he says, the sefrei was very intentional. It's like you're burying the child. It doesn't mean that the child, rachmanu l'tzlan, is no longer alive. But it means for that stage, you've blown it. If you don't capitalize, when the child begins to speak, that was the example in the pasuk or the medrash, if you don't capitalize then, you've killed it in some sense. It's never going to be the same. You've burned an opportunity. You've butchered something that could have been something very special. Look at the next page, page Tesla. A chance to revitalize the skill has been lost, ki'ilu kovra, as if you buried it. In the second paragraph on this page. B'tara kula. Now it's time to start.
Zero.
What? Zero. Zero. It's true. Mikad ola drisha. Sorry, I skipped one paragraph. B'tara kula yesh mashmos miyuchedes l'nekuras haschala. Torah takes the beginning stages as being very, very serious. Rosh Hashanah, Rosh Chodesh, speaking of tonight, Rosh Chodesh, Torah gives a lot of importance to the idea of the beginnings. What do they say? If you start off the week with a cash deal, it's going to be a good week? No, I didn't make that up. Come on, someone's heard that before. They say that in Brooklyn, right? They say that if you start off the week with a cash deal, it's a good opportunity, right? The things that we do at the beginning set the stage. And what always bothers people that by Rosh Hashanah, by Aseres Yemei Teshuvah, there's a certain chumras people take on, not to eat pasakum, not to have, you know, bakery bread. Certain donuts people always want to know. Is Dunkin' Donuts included in that? Is Dunkin' Donuts bread? Is it food? I don't know. People always want to know that. But the question is, why are we taking on things like extra chumras during Aseres Yemei Teshuvah that we don't plan on keeping the rest of the year? Trying to like trick Hashem? Like, okay, run to the microscope. Like, okay, let's pretend that we don't eat that stuff. Punch away. Oh, Yom Kippur's over? Like, whip it out. That's what it is? We're going to trick Hashem when the camera's on and he's looking at us? Could be that. Or it could be a sense of when the year is starting out, when the beginning is happening, the beginning sets the stage for everything afterwards. If there's a flaw in the foundation, then the whole building is not going to be secure. There's a crack in the seed, and that affects everything that grows out of the seed. A crack later in one of the branches or one of the top bricks is not as bad as having something rotten in the foundation. Understanding when a stage is beginning and talking about childhood, talking about the importance of imparting the right messages, building and planting, right? Finding the right opportunities at the right time has great effect for the entire year. When the year is starting out, we're not playing games. We're going to be especially careful how we behave during the beginning of the year because it sets the stage, even if we don't plan on keeping it for the rest of the year, but just a sense of to ourselves, we could be better than we are right now. And if during the rest of the year we forget how good we could be, we look back and say the year started out with us taking on certain Kabbalahs, taking on certain resolutions. There were many, many months after that, and I'm assuming most resolutions fell away. But still, just the fact that we could take on things like that, that we're in a mindset to say that this is going to be the year, that has significance as well. But if we don't take capitalize on it, then, as Yogi Berra said, it's getting late early. Isn't that what he said? That also he said. I think Yogi Berra said it's getting late early. Sometimes it's getting late really early. Sometimes time is moving faster than we know what's going on. Okay, when the kid's older, I'll make sure that they daven better or make brachos. I'll wait. Kid's been speaking for a long time and they don't make the brachos. They don't know the brachos. That's tough. It's tough to teach the kid later something that wasn't ingrained as a child. Those who have the great fortune of being taught the brachos, not just how to say them, but what bracha is what and different halachos of brachos, you can impart that now. I try whenever I can remember to like sneak something in. I'll hold the food in your right hand when making a bracha. Well, that's a halacha you can sneak in. And the kids are little, but they can listen to that. When you have two foods, and one is mezonos and one is shahakal, I make a mezonos first. Oh, if we're saying hamotzi, then we're not saying a bracha on other things. But we do for dessert. That could be a lot of information to a one-year-old.
I'm going to hold this now.
Where's that pen? Where's that pen?
Right hand, left hand.
Right?
Second, third.
Shoot, right? Still second, right? Meaning, the earlier these things are implanted, the more they become second nature. And if it's harder to learn later in life, they could become second nature. Some of these things are just so easy for a kid to pick up when they're little because they don't know any other way. And however they're taught, however the seed is planted and shaped at the beginning stage, can really shape the way it becomes 50 years later. People who value things, whether it's chesed, whether it's recognized, teaching kids to recognize people's feelings. to a little, little kid. A lot of my work as a therapist is teaching much, much older people how to recognize feelings, how to express feelings, how to recognize frustration and empathy. Those are things that, in theory, could be taught to a kid even at a really, really young age. There's books that teach these things at an early stage. Chinuch means to capitalize at the haschala. It means that a little bit of planting now in the beginning stage is the equivalent of several bookfuls or hours or lectures full much, much later. What podcasts are covering are things that some of which, at the right time and in the right presentation, could be shared with kids. Now the question becomes, so who, when, what, and how? So look at the next paragraph. He says, Mikan ola derisha berura kalapia horim. Parents have a very important investigation to do. Aleyam lahakir pachoso yoser. They need to figure out, more or less, in estimation, as hatakufo sheyeled over b'mahale chagidol shalo. And each child might be different. Two kids in the same family may not be the same. This is hard for those who have twins. Because there's an assumption that things, or those who are twins, right? It's really hard. There's an assumption that if one kid's ready to do something, then the other kid is ready as well. And that's not always the case. In fact, it's very often not the case. Why would two kids, just because they were born on the same day, necessarily develop in the exact same stages at the exact same time? And information or skills that might be ripe for one kid may not be ready for the other. And to wait too long for the kid who's ready, or to start too early for the kid who's not, could each one present difficulties. And to match up with each child where they're at, what they're able to take on. If we exaggerate and overdo the demands at a time when the child can't handle it, we're going to have some very, very, very specific examples that are very helpful. When the child doesn't really understand what the parent is asking, it's a terrible disaster. It cannot be absorbed or internalized when it's not the right time. The child cannot develop. The child doesn't understand, whether it's an expectation of behavior or religious function. If it's not the right stage, the child doesn't understand. The child has to go in stages. Now, here are the examples we're going to give for tonight. If you skip down to the end of the page. Navi mispar dugmaot mitzuyot. He's going to give three examples of where parents sometimes make a mistake between what they're expecting of the child and what state the child is actually at. Example number one, bottom of the page. Echa hadavarim hanefutzim, very common example about potty training. He discusses potty training. Imahot mitbarot bezeh, mothers love to brag. He says mothers, but it's probably fathers too. Mothers love to brag. Shehein etzlichu lechanech. As hatinokos linikiyot begil muktam. Parents love to brag if they were able to potty train their kids at an early stage, really young. My kid was two. My kid was one. My kid was not even born yet, and they're already potty training. Right? It's a bragging contest. Kechol she'etzlichu begil muktam yoser. The earlier the child was successful at being potty trained, kach tigadel hagava shalehen. That's how much the pride is going to be. However, he says, mekubal hayom. He follows the science, and this is correct, based on modern science. If you force a child too early to be potty trained, this is going to really affect what the child is able to do, not only in this moment, but mess up the whole development going forward. I think Freud would call this a mess up in the anal stage. The person becomes anal. Now, the person becomes neurotic, right? Now, Freud's ideas have been, to a large extent, discredited. But the idea of not forcing children too early to be potty trained is backed up by modern science as well. There will come a time when the child naturally wants to potty train, wants to learn, because they're ready. They're no longer like sitting in a soiled diaper or a pull-up, and it's too much for them, and they on their own decide, now is the time. And now it's a much more harmonious development when the child wants to. We experienced this personally with twins who were not ready at the same time to be potty trained. One was, and one was not. And it was very, very, we tried pushing one a little bit more, and it didn't work out, and it wasn't the right time. Now, sometimes parents of twins like to see if we can just, okay, we're already doing well, might as well do both of them, and then there's the jealousy factor, and that matters a lot. People used to say, twins is like two for the price of one. And I like to say, twins is two for the price of three. Because sometimes you have to go through things two different times, two different ways, and you have to deal with the fighting of why it's not my time right now. But sometimes it's just not. The kids may not be ready. Do you like this example? Hits home? Any good potty training stories? They're not too graphic?
No, it's good. It's almost like the opposite of what we were saying before. I know one's with the mitzvahs, learning, and this is like potty training, but like maybe just wait till the kid's ready to learn chumash.
That's true. I think you would agree. That's why he said the numbers 5 and 10 and 15 may not be exact for our time, because we have to figure out what is that time. And it might depend, what'd you say? It might depend kid to kid, right? And I think that's really the topic for next week, of how to individuate our education. And you mentioned this last time correctly, Rivi, that it's hard in a school system with 20-something kids in a class. How are we supposed to individuate our education, right? So this is a lot more...
Yes, I did.
It's really hard in a classroom setting, right? And that's why this is more of a parenting than a education setting, right? Parents have, hopefully, the expectation and the responsibility to educate and to raise their kids, and to do so in a way that really takes into account the right stage. So Baruch, I would say for mitzvahs too, for everything, we have to figure out what is the right stage. Meaning it's just because Chazal gave us a number, he wasn't comfortable with that number necessarily as a carte blanche applicable to all, that everyone has to follow the number 5. For some kids, maybe this kid's ready at 3, maybe for this kid they're not ready till 8, because they have different learning challenges, and to force a kid and say, no, Pirkei Avos is 5 years old, you're going to learn this chumash and you're going to like it. Okay, that sounds really damaging. But for a kid who is able to, at the age of 3.5 or 4 3/4, how old are our kids? 4 7/8? 4 7/8, and say, no, you're not 5, you can't learn any chumash. It's a question of each parent asking, when is my child in the right stage? And this is a lot of things to keep track of. It's per kid, per stage, per task and skill for that stage. Speaking is one skill. Speaking about feelings, speaking about their frustrations, speaking about problem solving, speaking about chumash, speaking about deep ideas, speaking about their wants and needs. Speaking is a large category, but maybe they're ready for speaking about content at this age, when speaking about feelings, not yet, or maybe they've already passed that stage where it could have been capitalized on. But this idea of potty training is something that there are kids who could be forced. They're starting a gun, they're starting a playgroup, and then the Morris says they have to be trained by now. I obviously understand, I'm sure he understands also, logistical problems. Kids are going to the playgroup, they have to be potty trained. If they're already 2 years old and they're not, then it's tough for the Morris to have to be able to adjust for that kid who maybe isn't at the same level as everyone else. So it's a tough question when it comes to schools and groups, how to work through that. But at least for the parents, to understand that pushing a kid too far may not be the right way to go. We have to understand where the kid is holding and let the kid kind of lead the way. Now, the buck has to stop here. The kid can't lead the way and just decide, you know, candy every night and bedtime is never... Wouldn't that be awesome for them? But we can't do it like that, right? We have to find a way to see what they're ready for. And we could do trial and error. Try to do something with the kid. You see it's not happening. Try a little harder. And you see if it's not happening. To push and get angry at the kid is to just force the kid to do something they're not ready to do. And we could yell, and we can scream, and we can bribe, and we can threaten. But if the kid isn't able to do it, then we're just forcing them to endure failure. Hova's told me this so many times before. Where I've been frustrated with one of my kids. Hova says, maybe she's not ready. Maybe she's just can't. It's not a question of won't. It's a question of can't. I think sometimes...
Mark, it has trouble with impulse control. She really can't help it.
She really can't help it sometimes, right? And it's very frustrating. And sometimes as parents, we get defensive. Like the kid throws something on the floor and like says no to us. Like, oh, like you dare challenge my authority? Like, are they really challenging your authority? Are they trying to develop autonomy? It's a little bit of a different spin on it. And to like force the kid to sit still, it's one of the examples he's going to bring. Example number 3. Let's turn to example number 2. The importance of play. On the last page in our booklets. Dugmano Sefes. Pamim rabos lo misyachasim maspik le'inyan ha-mischak shel hayelah. We don't recognize the importance of play for a child. Mischak zedavar ritzini ma'od etzel yelad. It's a very serious thing, play for a kid. Dramatic play of acting, pretending to be the teacher, pretending to be the bus driver. For kids who are involved in games, in puzzles, and art, play is a very serious thing for a kid. I love this next example he gives. Rabbi Yisrael Salanter used to say, Kasher yele mischak bekeresh betoch ambatia. When a child is playing with a wooden board, a block, in the tub. V'omer shezo onia. The kid says, look, it's a ship. Im lokhim mimenu es hakeresh hazeh. Parent says, put that away. And you grab the block away from the kid. Harei ze mamash kimo shahayu matbiyim sefina gedola shel adam mevugar. That's basically like sinking the yacht of an adult wealthy person. To the kid, this is their yacht. This is their boat. This is their cruise ship. It's a piece of wood. It's a block. It's a toy. But in the kid's mind, when they're playing, that is their equivalent to their ship. And the same way for an adult to hit sunk their battleship. Is that still a game we still play? Yes? Kids fight over that game all the time? Stop peeking. Stop cheating. To not recognize that to that child, play is so important, is failing to recognize what's going on in their world. I saw a beautiful cartoon that had like two panels. And the first panel is parents saying to the kid, like, clean up this mess. And like it's a big black and white pile of like pillows and dolls and teacups. And then the second panel has it from like the kid's point of view. And like it's all colored and like it's like a castle and there's like, you know, princes and horses. I mean, to the kid, it's like, clean up this mess. It's like, that's my fort. Like, that's my castle. That's my princess kingdom. Because to the in the child's world, that's everything. And we make a mistake. Hakeresh Eitzel Hayela who kimo Sfina Eitzel Adam Uvugar. Adam Shema Fria Liyela Bimishak Shelo. When a person disrupts a child's play, goes Amashu Menayel. You're stealing from the kid. You are robbing and you are taking away their whole world. You know, Brian Regan has a great example of this. He said he was with his kids at a carnival, and the kids were walking away. His kids were walking away with balloons. One of the kids let go for a second, and then the helium balloon goes up to the sky. And this kid who was like 7 or 8 starts screaming, like, no, my balloon, my balloon. He's stabbing his feet and throwing and screaming and crying. The parents are like, what's the matter with you? It's a balloon. We'll get you another one. And Brian Regan said, can you imagine if an adult took out their wallet and their wallet starts floating away? And they go, hey, hey, my wallet. And the kid goes, Abba, it's okay. It's a wallet. We'll get you another one. No, but I need that one. Why? As all my cards. Okay, I'll get you some more cards. No, you don't understand. For the kid, the balloon is their whole world. We'll get you another one. But I need that one. Why? What do you need that one for? They've already named it. They've already given it a whole backstory. This is their balloon. This is their stuffed animal. This is everything to them. For them, play is not just a matter of a silly game. A lot of studies have been done about the value of play. Dramatic play, of acting play, of coloring, of arts, of puzzles. Studies are incredible. Talking play for like little kids, like infants, 6 months old, a year old. To give them real toys and to when a parent plays with them. You know, book, monkey, right? To actually label that. They found that children who have increased play at the age of 6 months, a year, by the age of 3 have increased verbal skills, have higher IQ scores, have increased language, reading, social skills, empathy. By the age of 5 or 6, we're talking about correlations to the amount of play and the degree of play they had as little babies. Play for a kid is their whole world. It's how they express themselves before they could express themselves in words, before they can process the world that we know, the boring black and white mess that we see. They have this imagination. They have this world around them. And to take away their toy is to basically tell them, it's over. Your world is collapsing. Your boat is sinking. Your ship, your whole exaggerated fantasy is coming to an end. And that's really hard. It's really hard for when parents don't live in the same world as the kid. But to think about it, what is the child ready for? What is their stage of development? In this stage of development, we have to recognize that for them, this is how they express themselves. A lot of therapeutic techniques involve using toys, using games. You look at a child therapist's office, it's just a bunch of games and toys. One of my mentors used to say that her kids loved coming to her therapy office. This is where you work. This is the greatest office of all time. You have chutes and ladders, and you have art sets, and you have glitter. And yeah, because that's what child therapy is. It's getting, if you're going to discuss complex ideas, and God forbid, children who experience terrible things at a young age, you're not going to get to that with language. Child can't access that. To expect a child to talk about things at an age or a stage that is not right for them is terrible planting. It's expecting too much at the wrong time. In this stage and age, they are operating in a world of play. Then here's a third example. Potty training, playtime, and now sitting quiet. Yeshnam devarim, this will be our last example from him tonight. Yeshnam devarim, shehem ke'ein devarim muskamim. Yiduim u'mukubalim. There are things that we have to take for granted. We have to understand. Darach mashal. B'seudah Shabbos dorshim mehayaladim l'sheves liyad ha'shulchan b'meshach kol ha'seudah. There's an expectation for the kids to be at the Shabbos table and sit quietly for the whole meal. Afsha seudah nimshaches sha'o sha'o v'chetzi. The meal could last an hour, hour and a half. You didn't know about West Hampstead meals. Hour, hour and a half? That's just kiddish, right? Can you imagine? That's the pre-kiddish, like pre. That's the preamble. That's the pre-gaming. It's a pre-kiddish pre-game. And parents expect kids to be at the Shabbos table. I've been at Shabbos tables where a person is saying a Dvar Torah, a long, intensive, text-based Dvar Torah, and they keep shushing the kids who are not being quiet. No, no way. How can that be? The kid is supposed to sit quietly during the long Dvar Torah? Or just to sit there when the adults are talking about sheitels, I don't know, whatever things I talk about. You know, all the important matters of getting a new pool. Why would the kids care about that? Or the husbands, right? Why would we want to sit there through the whole thing? It matters. It obviously matters. But it's hard to expect the kid to sit there. You know what the kid needs to do? He says, Liyelet Sa'ir Zeh, for a young kid, Bil Tiyaf Shari, it's not possible. Yelad lo yachol l'sheves b'sheket kol kach harbe zman. Kids can't sit still for that long. Hu muchrach lehistoviv. He needs to run around. L'sheves b'meshach kol ha'seuda. To expect a kid to sit still the whole meal. Zeharbe l'malam min ha'kocho shalo. That's way beyond what they're able to do right now. Let them eat their little pieces of chicken nuggets. Go play. And you call them back for dessert. Sometimes you lose the kids. You don't know what's going on, where they are. Hey, it's too quiet. It's awfully quiet. But you call it dessert, they're rappelling down from the rafters, coming out from under the table. The neighbor's kids are coming over.
To call out dessert, yeah.
They can sniff out the dessert.
They just know.
You open the like thing of, you open the thing of regalach, and all of a sudden they come charging in.
They can be in the backyard.
The neighbors are going to come in, right? They hear the sound, the crack? They're going to come charging in. In machricham also, if we force the kid, we are forcing a kid to do something way beyond their capabilities. It goes without saying how terrible that's going to be. The parents are trying to do something good. They're not trying to undermine their kids. They're trying to build up the kid. In the process, they're forcing a kid. Child cannot be built up with something that's beyond, the expectation is way beyond what's right for their age and stage. Hatotzah mazika liyelad, it's long-term harm for the kid. Hanezek gadol b'miyuchad v'gil hatzair. We talked about the importance of capitalizing when the seed is implanted, when the foundation is being built, the Rosh Hashanah has an impact on the whole year. Damage done at this stage can have long-ranging consequences. Ki kol hafra'ah ketana b'zman hazriya, a small little disturbance at the time of the planting, alula lahavi meuchar yoser lidei totzaos chamuros, has terrible negative consequences in the long term. I think the same thing is true for bringing kids to shul, which is a hot topic and a very important issue to think about. And there's no one way, there's no one stage, there's no one way to do it. But sometimes you see the expectations parents put on kids in shul. I was once in a different shul, not this shul. Not that shul either, right? In a different shul, now a different shul. Different shul in a different neighborhood, where the person had a one-year-old next to them during davening, and they kept shushing the one-year-old. It's not the kid's fault that they can't sit still during the rabbi's nine-minute drasha. You're welcome, by the way. Right? It's not the kid's fault. The kid is one. To expect the kid to be quiet is not fair. It's completely not just counterproductive, but undermines the kid's ability to express themselves.
I think the criticism comes when they're with the kid for 10 minutes. It takes them 10 minutes to leave.
Yeah, right.
The parent needs to, make...
Which minute are you talking about?
This sounds like you were a little upset last week.
Not the 9-10.
It's very tough, right, to think about. And
I'm going to bring in all the kids for...
Zachar?
For Zachar, that is specifically for women.
People who need to hear it.
After.
Right, the question is that the right, is that the right age? Is that the right stage? And to yell at the kids to be quiet is just... I thought it was rhetorical, right? To expect a kid at that age, at that stage, is not just unrealistic, but it's harmful to the child. To expect a kid to sit still in school, or in shul, or at a Shabbos table, or at a Pesach Seder, I can't even tell you how many Pesach Sedarim are not conducive to V'higadot Levincha B'yom HaOlemor. The mitzvah of the night is to teach kids this story. If there are long-winded Dvar Torahs that do not match the age of the kids, well then the kids aren't learning anything. The kids are frustrated, and they grow up thinking that Pesach is awful. Pesach can be awful and also be meaningful, right? Especially when it's a three-day yantiv, right? And that's the best of all time. It's the early stage experiences that are going to follow the kids for the years to come. What are they going to think about this? What are they going to be able to keep with them about learning? What does school mean for them? What does learning mean? What does the Dvar Torah mean for them? What does shul mean for them? I think often the mistake comes when people say, on the other hand, you want to be mechanech children at an early stage to come to shul. And if you wait too long, there's the other end of the problem. You're not capitalizing. If you don't do it then, as if you killed the kid, as if you buried the opportunity because you didn't capitalize. You wait too long to bring the kid to shul. People will say, yeah, it's disturbing davening in shul, but for chinuch purposes, it's good. It's chinuch versus davening. No, it's chinuch versus chinuch. To bring a kid to shul at a time when they can't sit still and they shouldn't be able to sit still, that's not good chinuch of coming to shul, but unfortunately it disturbs other. That's bad chinuch. The kid is going to associate shul with being shushed, of being forced to be in a place that doesn't make any sense. They don't understand what's going on and why they can't express themselves. They're eating a lollipop, but when they say, can I have another flavor? Can I have another flavor? It's like, shh! You give me a lollipop, but I don't want this one. I can't say I don't like it. What do you expect from the kid? Why are we setting up kids for situations that are not matim for the current stage?
Or worse.
Yeah, but you could bring a kid.
The more that they like shut out, the worse they are, the more lollipops they like shut out their mouth.
Right. Whatever it takes. What's being reinforced over there, right?
You're welcome.
It's being reinforced that the kid needs
a lot of
candy.
I don't shush them. I tell them, here's a lollipop and you can talk. They get bring them games and bring them, you know, poppets and whatever it is. But every single time when we don't have groups, I still let my wife sleep in. I love her immensely. And I'll take all three kids.
Sorry for those of you that it affects, but I don't care.
But it'll also show them that shul could be a place where you could go, and it doesn't have to be 100% quiet, and it could be something that it can be nice and useful to go to.
100%. I think if it's time to bring the kids in shul, if the kid can sit for 10 minutes, then 10 minutes of chinuch, that's awesome.
Yeah, but you would never take a one-year-old to shul.
I've done it.
Uh-oh.
I've taken pretty cool.
Do you
end
in
trapping
shul or
are
you
out of
the
mall? Huh? No, I bring her. Yeah, if it gets
you
too
need
rowdy.
You need some good toys.
Good toys. When we went to shul was when it was COVID.
It was the home shul, not the home shul.
One and a half.
But I think you're raising the correct point, meaning it's not a question of yes or no, yeah. Right? It's a question of what can the kids sit through now, what can they experience now,
but also what can they not? How you deal with the situation. If they see that shul is still important to the parent and I'm willing to take my kid there, and it's going to be a learning experience for them. It doesn't have to be that they have to be quiet. I love the 9-10 minion for that because we don't require quiet.
It's a different expectation for young families. And I think that there's definitely a chinuch opportunity there.
Sometimes enough.
I think...
But then we go into the kitchen. And then, you know.
Right? Meaning the answer is that it's a question of balance, right? It's not too early, it's not too late. We want to make sure the kids get some experience, right? The Megillah reading for that age is different than Megillah reading in other places. And that's how it should be. We should be able to find a balance between what can they sit through and what can they not, and what do they need and what are they not.
Are you only sure 18-minute Megillah reading?
I find that when I bring my son to shul 2 weeks and then give him a week off, it allows him to realize, okay, I'm going to go, I'm going to daven, but then at some point I'm going to be able to just stay home and play. So
mm-hmm.
I find that works pretty well.
It's a good question. As if we're giving definitive rules, we're in the wrong place. If we're grappling with the question, we're doing something right. If we're grappling with the question of, is this the right time? If it's the right time, how much can they sit through? How much should they be expected to do? Right? Because we want to create an environment where people feel welcome, where shul is not a turnoff for people who have young children and they should be able to come. And at the same time, the question is not yes or no, but how much? Can they sit for 5 minutes, daven adon olam, and go out? It'd be cool for the adults, right? Come for adon olam and leave. It's the best type of minion of all time. We get the most people. But that's the question, right? Not yes or no, but how much, when, and in what way? We'll just end off by giving you, I'm not going to go through this all, obviously, but we talk about different stages. I'll share with you some of the well-known research in the field of psychology about different stages. Huh? There's a psychologist who passed away in the 90s. His name was Eric Erickson, which is the best name of all time. Can you imagine being named Erickson and naming your kid Eric? Eric Erickson. Look at some Jewish names like Abraham. Those are names like that. So Eric Erickson, in the 1950s and the 1960s, put out what's known as the 8 stages of psychosocial development. Psychosocial means the combination of the child's own psychological abilities, and social, what the environment demands of the child. We're not going to go through all these. But just to take a look for a second at what we're talking about when we say different stages from a modern lens. Right? So Eric Erickson talked about in the first stage of development, a child is going through, and the way he frames it is that every stage of life, there's a conflict. There's an opportunity here where during this stage, some side of a conflict is going to be resolved. So for example, during stage number one, for the first year and a half of life, the basic conflict is a question of trust and mistrust. And what's happening for a child in that stage of life is a child can't do anything on their own. They need to be fed, they need to be dressed, they need to be changed, they need to be held, they need to be comforted, put to sleep, put back to sleep again and again and again. Right? That's what the child needs right now. The child needs to know, is the world safe? Can they have expectations? If they cry, their needs are going to be met. If that stage is done successfully by the parent, because the parent is attentive to the fact what the child needs is a safe attachment, a sense of consistency, a sense of complete, infallible comfort, and the child learns to trust. Child learns to trust the family. Child learns to trust the world at large. And if a child is not given consistent care at that time, or a child is, Rahman al-Islan, abandoned or going to foster homes in those stages, it has lifelong impediments for the areas of trust, for problems of fear, for problems of anxiety. Where do these come from in childhood? If there's a problem with the seed, if there's a problem with the Rosh Hashanah, it has effects for the whole year. Chinuch means haskalah, means what's happening at this stage. At this stage, it's important for a child to have security. In the next stage of life, the question is, can the child develop some sort of autonomy? Can the child begin to take care of their needs in cleanliness, toilet training, dressing themselves? A lot of people say, a lot of research says, let the child dress themselves at the age of 3, even though it's mismatched. The shoes are on the wrong feet, and the socks don't match the shoes. It's more important for the kid to be able to get dressed and be told, good job, dress yourself, right? To some way or another, right? It's a challenge to say, can I do something? Now, to some extent, can I pull the fire alarm? No, right? So it's not a question for everything, but for certain areas, can we have a child learn, I can do some things by myself. I can do some things on my own. Some things, yes. Some things, no. Successfully navigating that stage has a kid coming out of there saying, I don't have to rely on others for everything. I don't have to be codependent my entire life. I can develop a healthy sense of autonomy. In stage number 3, now the kid is already preschool age, 3 to 5, there's a question of not just can the kid, you know, feed themselves or can get dressed themselves, but can they start to initiate themselves? Can they be the boss? Can they direct the game? Can they be in charge and say, you know, mommy, you're the student and I'm the teacher, or I'm the parent and you're the kid, right? Very often in these kinds of games, we find out the kids spit back to us the same threats that we give them, right? When they're the parent, when they're the teacher, it's like, your teacher says that? What? Do I say that sometimes? Oh, I do say that. My kid sounds awfully lot like me. My kid's version of being a parent sounds awfully much like myself. But in that stage, let the child have some sense of not pushing boundaries to the point of violating important rules to us, but some rules we have to put our foot down, and for other rules we have to say, no, let the kid direct it. Let the kid direct the play. Let the kid have that sense of initiative, not just autonomy, but actually taking the initiative. And as the kid goes to school, get to stage number 4, where the question is, can the kid be successful in school activities and socialization and academics? And success needs to be defined by the institution and by the family. Because success, we often make a mistake. When the kid is intelligent, they're getting 100s, they're successful. And if the kid is not getting 100s, then, you know, A for effort. What if we praised effort for everybody? Even the kids who are getting 100s. Because you teach the kids, it's all about the 100s, so then when they get 100 without studying, they're not learning to study. They're learning that they should just game the system. If those who aren't doing well, they're not doing well. We have a chance to define what success means. If success means trying hard, if success means resilience, and the kid can learn, okay, can I be successful? Can I be industrious? Or am I going to feel inferior to everyone else? And the last one, we'll end off with this. As the kid gets to adolescence, the kid is starting to struggle with identity versus their role, having a role confusion. And this is, I think, is very important. The child wants to know, who am I? Not just a question of, am I doing good things or not doing good things? It's a question of, who am I? The child internalizes, in adolescence, mistakes or lack of friends or something wrong with them. They're not a good person, but they have few friends. It's that they're a failure, that they're stupid, that they're ugly, that they're terrible. We have a chance to shape that for kids in those stages, to think about the fact that in this stage, they're really struggling not just with the question of doing right and wrong, but being right and wrong. So to wrap up, our takeaways for tonight, building on the idea of building and planting, understanding that these are dual processes, both about fostering organic development from the child, and at the same time, concretely building up a child, giving them information. But for each of them to think about, what is this current stage of the child? What can they handle right now? What is within their grasp, and what is too far for them? What are they able to do, and what's asking too much? He has examples for potty training, understanding what they can do in terms of play, and sitting still. If we can recognize this, and it's never too late. Whatever we think has passed, whatever numbers we discuss over here, it's a guideline. And Erickson himself said, no parent is perfect. I got the last one. But no one's expected to never yell at a child when they're a baby or to, you know, put pressure on a kid when they're older. It's not a question of yes or no. It's a question of, can we overall focus on these stages and see what is the child grappling with now? What is the stage of development now? What is ripe to be planted now? And how can we foster healthy, emotionally, children for an entire lifetime?